Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Tim, and this is Get On Board,
a podcast about games worth playing.
So, today's topic is questions. Questions about board game reviewing. Questions maybe that you should ask about board game reviewers and how they review games. And look, we're not pointing the finger necessarily outside ourselves on this one. At the beginning stage of Get On Board, we are asking ourselves a lot of these very same questions. So,
but you should definitely listen to two random guys on the internet.
Yes, absolutely.
Never fails.
Right, right. So here we go. We have compiled a list of questions. Questions we ask ourselves about board game reviewing. Questions that we've asked as we've seen others review. And I think there is a core question, Andrew, about board game reviewing, which is it possible to say that a game is objectively good or objectively bad?
See, I really wrestle with this one because for me, where I immediately go is the experiences that I've had with board games. And I may disagree with you, but nothing stops you from having a great time playing Monopoly. And not to go, maybe that's an ad hominem to just go straight to a game that is almost universally hated. And, you know, I can identify objectively bad elements of games, but I can't dictate what someone's experience with the game may be.
Okay, now, among the board game geek community, I think you would be hard-pressed to find somebody that would say that Monopoly is a great game.
Sure.
And yet, I had somebody show up to a board game night about 2 months ago that said, man, where are all the simple games, the games I love, games like Monopoly? And in her family and in her crowd, it's not about being thinky. It's not about being deep. It's about doing something that everybody is familiar with and doing it together as an activity.
Right.
Is Monopoly really an objectively bad game? As much as I kind of would like to say yes, I don't know if I can say that.
I think we're standing on more solid ground if we point out objectively bad elements of it. Take, for example, a game that I really dislike, Bang.
Okay.
The Bullet. Now, plenty of people have fun with Bang, but I can point out specific things that I dislike about the game, and when I bring those up, people kind of understand better why I don't want to play it. Well, for one thing, it takes way too long.
Right.
You know, I have 15 minutes of fun in a two-hour game. For another thing, there's player elimination, so it's entirely possible that I'm sitting there for an hour and a half of the 2 hours doing absolutely nothing. And that really bothers me. So my primary problem with Bang is the game length and the way that relates to, you know, how the players react to the game.
And it's a little too easy, I think, especially with smaller crowds, to figure out the social deduction piece of it. It becomes a little obvious too early who the outlaws are. The renegade is sometimes a little bit hard to figure out. But it still was a favorite among a gaming group that I had for a long time because of its sort of epic shoot each other around the table, Old West sort of feel. And we had a lot of fun with that game despite, I would agree with you, there are some problematic elements to that game. But can you objectively say Bang is a bad game? But I hear what you're saying. You're saying that there are some elements that you think are just objectively not a good idea.
Right. And for me, those elements kill the game. Now, for you, they may not. But I think a reviewer's job would be to say, here are these elements. There's a pretty good consensus that player elimination is not fun unless you're playing, you know, a 15-minute filler game. So while this game may be for you, it's not for me, and player elimination is the reason why.
Right. Right. So as I think of objectively bad games, I really had to sort of rack my brain for one.
Okay.
And
I didn't.
Okay. Well, I was trying to think of one that just sort of in its design, it was clearly sort of not well thought out. And the game that came to mind was Game of Crowns. Okay. Now, I've seen playthroughs of it. I have not bought it on principle, even to play it or review it or try it out. It's one of those things that's almost worth having in your collection just to show how bad a game can be, I think.
That's really harsh.
Yeah, it is harsh. And the title alone should cause should cause a harsh response from gamers. The fact that AEG is, by the way, is a company that I love. AEG, come on, Doomtown, Smash Up, two of my favorite games come from this company. The fact that they would release a game that was so obviously a knockoff of Game of Thrones in both its name and sort of the core design of its gameplay, but by almost everybody's standards, just rushed something to market that wasn't well playtested, that kind of had some good ideas, but it was just sort of like thrown together to get out there to put on a board game shelf to make a buck. And in this hobby, we don't need more of that. We don't need crap games like that taking up space on the shelves. And I know I may be having a really visceral response to that, but I just thought it was incredibly cynical.
So here's the thing. I don't struggle to come up with a game that I didn't enjoy. My pick would be Emergence, which is a Kickstarter game that I backed. But here's the thing. While I was able to identify that game as a bad game, and let me be clear, I played it 5 or 6 times. I actually even had a Fix Emergence game night session where those of us who loved the look of it and loved, you know, some pieces of it tried to get together and really house rule a fix for the game, which is not, that's not something that I afford many games. You know, I really, you know, reviewers always say, well, I wanted to love this one. I did want to love this one. The graphic design was beautiful. It had some interesting ideas. It took a basic social deduction core and added a board to that. So it added a spatial element. It had some interesting ideas, but it was just half baked and the balance just was not there. But here's my question to reviewers, or to us as we think of reviewing. Do we really need to point out the Game of Crowns and the Emergences of the world? Because is there anyone who's really out there saying, man, I really want to buy Emergence? You know, if you've done your work and you found this obscure Kickstarter game and it looks like it flips your lid and it's going to be great, you've done enough research to know that probably you're going to enjoy it. And a reviewer might not even be able to dissuade you. So I wonder if we might be tempted to just use those as punching bags. Mm-hmm. My impulse would be to go more towards the mediocre games. And as I looked through the games that I've played, games that I no longer own, I didn't find so many objectively bad games as I found just decently mediocre games. So I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. What should we do with the games that are fine?
Yeah, and that's the next big question. And this is one I've wrestled with a lot this week. We kind of threw out this topic last week and this list of questions, and I've just been ruminating it over it all week. One of the frustrating things for me about board game reviewers is when they, at the end of a review, will say, yeah, it's a good game. Yeah, it's a good game. Try it out, you know, see if you like it. You know, it's good. Well, what do I do with that?
Right.
Because there are several experiences I've had with good games, games that reviewers said were good. Very often, I'll play the game and I'll think, okay, it is good, but there are 50 other, I don't know, worker placement games like this, or there are already 10 other deck builders like this. Did this really add anything to the equation? Did it really, you know, take deck building up a notch? But on the other hand, is it right? I mean, who am I to make that qualification? There's probably somebody in the world who plays that game and says, no, I like this better than every other deck builder because it has this or this or this. And that's what's tough for me are the good games.
Well, in a reviewer's defense, it's very difficult to make the call on a game. You know, there are not that many games that people have come to a consensus about. I mean, board gamers love disagreeing, if anything. And so I can see why a reviewer would say, well, it's easier for me to say, this game is good, you might enjoy it, than to make a distinction one way or another. I think one example is, no pun included, used to have their buy, try, or stay away scale, which they've quietly ditched because I think they realized that there's more nuance to it than that and that they struggled to fit games into those three categories. Although I like the idea in principle of those buckets, I think that perhaps there is room for a little more nuance in a recommendation. Perhaps a game is really great but has one fatal flaw, or perhaps a game is decent but will really appeal to one audience. And identifying those things as a reviewer is really difficult.
So now let's take this. I do want to come back to the good game problem, but you just kind of opened the door to another one of our questions. It's later down the list, but I think we should pull it out right now.
Okay.
Which is, should reviewers give a game that kind of final, yes, you should buy it sort of opinion?
Hmm.
There are a number of gamers, a reviewer, by the way, that I really love and respect, Cody from The Discriminated Gamer, does the, you know, buy it or try it before you buy it, or it's not really worth it kind of conclusion on every one of his. Now, there is something refreshing about it. The upside of that is I get a recommendation from somebody whose gaming tastes I really tend to agree with, and in his case, I very often do.
Right.
And so I feel really comfortable with that. If he's saying buy it, I know he's made a commitment, and I like that. He took the risk to make a commitment to say this is a game worth buying. But what do you do sort of when you buy it and your experience isn't really the same? You sort of think, well, you know, why did he say buy it? I mean, I see this or this or this problem. Wouldn't it have been better to say, try it before you buy it kind of thing, right? So the upside is a reviewer makes a commitment. We feel comfortable with that commitment. It's kind of nice to hear his final opinion so strongly. But the downside is that from our perspective, our fun experience, our experience, you know, our fun level might not be the same with that very game.
And we might even disagree amongst ourselves on a game. I mean, we've disagreed on plenty of them.
Right.
I wonder if it might not be best for a reviewer to be very solid, to in a sense embrace the subjectivity of their opinion and say, you know what, this is just me, guys, but I loved this game. And then what we could see to kind of go along with that is just more clarity, more explicit talking about, this is my taste in games. I mean, sure, if I watch 50 Tom Vassell videos or 50 Rotto videos or 50 Shut Up and Sit Down videos, I have a pretty good idea of their tastes.
Mm.
But I wonder if a reviewer could be successful by simply saying, here are my tastes, and condensing it into maybe a 5-minute, almost an introduction to the person. And then you lean into the subjectivity of, I played this game and this is what it did for me. And because someone can go and watch that 5-minute video, they know how they're similar to and different from me, and they can kind of put my recommendation in their own matrix of opinions about that game.
Although with the reviewers I listen to, I mean, that video almost isn't needed after about watching 10 reviews.
That's true.
You really get a feel for what that person is into, what they're not into. But I hear what you're saying. The other side of it, though, kind of the other extreme that I've seen of that is when a reviewer just won't commit. And that to me is a little bit frustrating. They're like, well, yeah, you know, here it is, and, you know, you can try it and see what you think. No, tell me how it made your friends feel. That's what I actually like about Shut Up and Sit Down.
Right.
They put a lot of stock in that. How did it make their friends feel? What did it do with the group dynamic around the table?
I think that's a really important piece, actually. I think reviewers, the analysis is what you're there for. You're not really there for an unboxing, a brief rules explanation. You're really there for their analysis of what the game did for them. Mm-hmm. And I like to hear a final opinion, because you're right. There's such a long tail of decent games. I mean, I thought of 7 games just straight off the top of my head, 5 minutes of looking through my games that are games that were fine. And you know what? Without exception, they're all games that I no longer own. I didn't hang on to them because they're decent, you know? And if a game is just decent, I want a reviewer to tell me that. If it really is just inoffensive, you know, then tell me that. And probably I personally will stay away from it. Someone who has 1,000 games will maybe buy it. But at least you've told me that, you know, this game is fine. And in a time when we've got so many games available to us, you can say that. It's okay. If a game gets swept under the rug, it's okay.
And you may have noticed, we're talking about other reviewers, but I hope you understand the spirit. We don't expect any reviewer to be perfect. And the reviewers we're talking about, we actually have the greatest respect for.
Oh, yeah. We listen to these guys. We love them.
Shut up and sit down. One of my favorite quotes that Quinn's often says is, we live in an era of board game opulence. I think I've said that word for word or pretty close. But I would agree with that. Why settle for good games when you can find a great game?
Right.
And I still realize there's an element of subjectivity to that. But I don't know. Like, as you were thinking about, okay, let's get a couple of mediocre games out of the way right now. Like, okay. What are some that you think are just kind of like mediocre and really aren't adding anything to the to the hobby?
So one pretty well-regarded game, Lanterns: The Harvest Festival.
Right.
I think is stunningly mediocre because, you know what? I sit down and play it, and no matter what I do, I'm a couple points either ahead of everyone else or behind everyone else, and the game just plays itself. Council of Verona is a lightweight deduction game that, if anything, is just too lightweight because it's so short that you don't actually have time to deduce anything.
Right.
So it's inoffensive at best. Quadropolis, which was a game I really enjoyed the first five times I played it, I'm now done with because I realized, actually, I'm just going to do the same thing every single game. And the metagame of that game got really stale for me really fast. Fresco was a game that I tried. I enjoyed the simultaneous action selection. I didn't disagree with a single thing in Fresco. Everything was fine. But at the end of the day, I just would never pull it off the shelf instead of anything else.
Yeah, see, Fresco's the one I'm more than willing to give another chance. I've only played it once. Okay. And I enjoyed it, but I am more than willing to give that one another shot. But yeah, so that's an example right there of something that you found.
Right.
Well, good. That one wasn't on the low end of mediocre.
That one was actually on the high end of mediocre. Yeah. I would try it again, but I didn't feel a compelling urge to hang on to it. You know, you can kind of tell with the really good games, even after one play, you can tell this is something that matches my taste, something that I can hang on to.
Right.
Fresco just wasn't that exciting, but I'd try it again.
There's a game that, of course, I'll say, and we're going to need to resist the temptation to keep coming back to this one. It was, you know which one it is. Say it. Just say it.
I actually don't.
Treasure Hunter.
Ah, Treasure Hunter. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Poor Richard Garfield.
Yeah. Okay, you know, I love the mechanic of card drafting. And I really love when the game is not just a card drafter, although I love some that just are, but it does something else, sort of manipulates something on a board. So all the signs were good that I would love Treasure Hunter. And in the end, it takes as long to explain as a heavyweight, or as a game twice its weight. It takes a long time to play for less satisfaction than Seven Wonders or Sushi Go, even, which right. I'm not actually a huge fan of, only because I've gotten burnt out on it. It is a good game, but in the end, that's a game that we played and it was like, okay, there wasn't anything really that wrong with this game, but I would never really break it out again. I gave it two tries.
Three, actually. We tried that one three times.
Oh, that's right. We did try that one three times.
We gave it several tries.
Yeah, I'm not. So that's an example of one that I think kind of falls in the lower end of mediocre. But I was looking through my game closet the other day, and like one popped out at me, Dungeon Pets. It's a Vlada Chvátil worker placement game with kind of a cutesy, quirky theme that I actually like. Hilarious rule book, actually. But in the end, it was just kind of like your average worker placement game, and it didn't really do anything terribly different from a lot of other worker placement games, and it just hasn't come off the shelf, and I'm not sure that I could like just really recommend it compared to some of the worker placement games I really love, like Manhattan Project or Russian Railroads. So
there's a place we agree.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe we could consider one thing that I think is a really helpful tool for board game reviewers is direct comparisons. You know, you tried to explain Treasure Hunter and you resorted to Sushi Go and Seven Wonders, which I think is telling because the game is longer than Sushi Go and less interesting than Seven Wonders. So it falls in this twilight zone where both of those fill different aspects of Treasure Hunter better than Treasure Hunter itself does. So I think direct comparisons can be really helpful, especially if you can compare it to popular games like that many people have tried.
And that really is actually one of the other questions on the list today is it fair for reviewers to compare a game to another game? Is it fair to say that this game is okay, but because this other game exists, it may not be worth playing? There is something in me that resists that. Only because sometimes I see the comparisons made and I'm thinking, I don't fully agree with that comparison. Shut Up and Sit Down. Again, decent review of Zaya, which is one of my absolute favorite games. But the comparison at the end was that if you really like being a jerk to your friends, you might prefer to play a game like Merchants and Marauders, which is, okay, has some similarities, but it's a very, very different game. For me, it would not scratch the same itch. And so I sometimes find myself hearing the comparisons and going, I don't necessarily agree with that. I hear this about the game, and this happens a lot right now, and it's because it is such an incredible game, Concordia.
Right.
Boy, reading different posts on BoardGameGeek and in other places, Concordia's killed about a dozen games in various people's
single-handedly.
Minds. Yeah, and sometimes I look at it and go, okay, I kind of get that, but sometimes I think, but no, not really.
I think what they're expressing is just Concordia is one of those games that, with a few exceptions, which you do see, there's a pretty clear consensus that this is a really good, tight game. This fills that midweight Euro slot so well that it would be really hard to find another game that could unseat it.
Okay, but if you're comparing it to like a worker placement midweight Euro?
Right, they're
it's
different.
It's not a valid comparison.
No, exactly. No, I agree.
Well, okay, I say that, but if a person kind of looks at that, if it gives them the sort of same experience to do... But I don't know. To me, that's not a valid comparison.
It depends on, I think, where a lot of people recommend it. They recommend it on the game length. I think that's one of the huge sweet spots for Concordia. Mm. And I think a lot of times people will say, well, I'm looking for a game that plays in an hour. And they're less concerned with the mechanic. Maybe they have two or three worker placements that they're looking at. Yeah. But what they're really concerned with is the time length. And Concordia has a really sweet time frame. You know, that hour and a half gameplay is really appealing because it's... You know, it's done and packed up before you're halfway through, you know, Terra Mystica or even a Russian Railroads, neither of which are the heaviest Euro out there.
But even my own comparisons, though, like if I look at what Concordia has fired for me, mm-hmm. somebody else would, I think, be just as justified as looking at my firing there and right. see the same problem. For instance, the game that Concordia fires for me is one I haven't seen mentioned, which is Mission Red Planet. Because Mission Red Planet uses that same core mechanic of you have a limited number of sort of characters in your hand, although the right. difference is you can't add to them like you can right. in Concordia, and I get that.
That might actually save Mission Red Planet for me.
That might, actually. And I loved Mission Red Planet. That's a game that, boy, I love the theme, that whole steampunk sort of retro sci-fi theme was absolutely lovely. I loved the designers and many of their other games, and I hated to admit at the end that the cards just didn't give you enough options to move your guys around on the planet to really make the battles engaging and interesting.
Right.
And boy, but that's one that could be fixed so easily with like an expansion.
Yeah, Mission Red Planet just needs an expansion to add fun.
Is there an expansion for that?
No, I don't think so.
I'll be really embarrassed if there is. And we cut out this podcast.
I haven't heard of one. I would actually, that would make me give the game a second chance.
That
because
would actually do it too.
I agree with you that the roles are too restrictive. Once your astronauts are out there, you're kind of stuck. And my criticism with the game was whoever lucked into the most high value provinces at the beginning in the first round when the values are still hidden,
right?
Whoever lucked into the most of those, you know, kind of holds them because it's really hard to unseat someone.
Mm-hmm.
So they get their money machine going and you're wasting time sending astronauts to try and fight them. I'm pretty sure there's only one card that moves astronauts, or maybe two.
There are two, I think.
Okay.
That do it.
I guess there's the mover and then the military one, which can remove other people's as well.
And of course, there's always the option of putting your guys on the ship and directing that ship to the space where the guys are. I mean, so there are ways to do it, but it's just not enough, I think, for that game. But that's why Concordia fires it for me, is because you had a much wider range of options, but you still had the same tension of, do I play a card from my hand, but I really need one of the cards I already played?
Mm-hmm.
Do I kind of, in essence, skip my turn to pull them all back up and start the process again?
I think comparisons are subjective, too. And I think as long as you are explaining what parts of the game you're comparing, it can fill the same role. Like, here's an example. For me, Concordia has fired Catan. Now, the two games are nothing alike, but what specifically about Catan still grabs me after all these years is that trading. When you've got a group that's willing to trade and really work with one another, and, you know, I recognize that a lot of groups do not do that, but that's the one element of that game that I really enjoyed. So Concordia, with its too small map and Pretorius board up at the top left where you're right. flipping resources and you're interacting with each other, that for me had a lot of that easy breezy kind of resource management, enemy of my enemy is my friend type of thing that mm-hmm. I found in Catan. And it plays faster. Everyone knows that to be true.
Oh gosh.
And not only did it fire Catan for me personally, but it's a great foil. It's the one that I go to when someone says, oh, board games, yeah, I've played Settlers. And I say, well, actually, I don't own Settlers of Catan, but I've got this other game that you've got to try because I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, I've been conspicuously silent with any comments about Catan. I've been riding this, the snob train against that game for years. And I did used to love it like so many of us did. But, I
just can't hate that game. The only reason I don't have it is because I played it against computers online. I played probably 100, 120 times, and yeah. that's a game space that you can exhaust in that many plays. So
yeah. Okay, so the murdered game, you know, may be different for different people, and there's still an element of subjectivity to that.
Right.
And that's something that, okay, I think that's where we're kind of landing on yeah. that.
And I feel like I'm oversimplifying it to say, well, just explain why you're subjective. You know, that obviously is easier said than done. Mm-hmm. But I do think if you try to drill down into the specific aspects of the game, you know, just explain, well, what parts of the two games make you feel like they're similar? What part does game B do better such that it replaces game A? And if you just kind of spell that out, you know, I think that helps that subjectivity element.
Okay, there. I just looked at our list here. There are two questions I hadn't planned on tying together, but I think it'll be fun to tie them together because I think one is the answer to the other. And maybe I'm gaming the opinion a little bit too much for you, but feel free to call me on that if you see it. Should a reviewer play a game multiple times before they release an opinion?
This is a difficult one. Because some reviewers, I'm not naming any names, but they start with T and end with Om Vassal. I really admire how Tom he is a living board game encyclopedia.
Oh, yeah.
He remembers publishers, release years, mechanics. He can pull a game out of his head that he hasn't played since 2005 and tell you what it's about, how the strategy, and he just does this intuitively. I think for someone like that, he can look at a game and immediately cross-reference it with all of the other games he's experienced and say after one play, yeah, this doesn't have it. Compared to these games, or even just these games do that mechanic better.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to be very clear. This is not pandering to try to get onto the Dice Tower Network. Now, I'll say about Tom is that I think why it works for him, why he can play a game once and usually be right.
Right.
That's why I keep going back to his reviews. Usually be right. Wait a second, though. We want people to listen to our reviews eventually.
That's true. Tom's always wrong.
Yeah, that's right. No, wait. I'm confused now. No. I think Tom has impeccable instinct. I think his wealth of gameplay combined with that instinct really gives him an ability to look at a game and say, I see the problem in this game even after one play.
Absolutely.
But even at that, I don't think most people have that instinct. I don't think most reviewers have that instinct.
Right.
And I also think that there are some games, and this is the other question that I was going to tie into it, is when do we call a game broken and unbalanced? And how careful should we be about that? And yeah, I'm exposing this question's gamed a little bit because this is one of my pet peeves.
Right.
I can't stand it when I hear reviewers say, yeah, I think this game is a little bit unbalanced because Faction A seemed much stronger than Faction B.
Right.
Especially when I already have that game in my collection. And I know, yeah, it seems like that at first until you try Faction C on it or until you use this strategy with Faction B on it, which is really designed to play against A. But that only comes with multiple plays.
Let me push back on you. I think broken and unbalanced are two different things. I'm in agreement with you in terms of balance. I think that's much harder to suss out of a game. I mean, take Tigris and Euphrates, which is my personal hot game right now. I haven't begun to figure out the strategy behind that game, which means that when I play it with someone or with newbies, you know, none of us know what we're doing. So the game's unbalanced. But that doesn't mean that the game is inherently unbalanced. It means that we need to stick with it and figure it out. And I think that's that's recognizable. However, when a game is broken, and I would go back to the ones I mentioned at the beginning, Emergence, which had a game-breaking problem where one team always won. And this was after repeated plays, or Council of Verona, where the game was actually just too short to really deduce. So it was just pure randomness. I think those flaws are more obvious, more inherent to the game, where you can, I think it may be easier to call a game broken after one play than unbalanced after one play.
Well, let me define broken then. Okay. Because like with Emergence, that's what I would call broken. Like when one faction always wins.
Right.
And that's, broken comes from like the whole, you know, trading card era when, you know, publisher would release a card not really having fully thought through all the implications, and there are like millions of combinations, and then somebody finds that one combination with that new card that makes that deck win all the time, and so that's broken. So no, but I hear what you're saying. There is a distinction. Fair enough. Let me hit unbalanced, and so let me share the story. This is the third podcast in a row that's the game Smash-Up has come into play.
Fair enough.
But that's one that when we first played, it was like, okay, so I bought the core set and Awesome Level 9000 together.
Yeah.
And after a few plays, my son and I just agreed steampunks are broken.
Yeah,
they're just broken,
especially if you put them with robots or zombies.
Yeah they're just broken.
Yeah,
but I disagree now,
right?
Because it was just that we didn't have enough experience on what factions to choose to play against it.
Right.
And it is true, like in that game, it is true that there are some combinations that would never beat a steampunk zombie. But there are other faction combinations that could, and I know we disagree on this one too, but as more factions were released, that actually became better even. And so, but I don't think you could have caught that. I don't know how many times we said, oh, dragons are overpowered. Oh, robots are overpowered.
I haven't found the zombies the proper counter for dragons yet. So yeah, I don't play the game as much as you do. This is a slight tangent, but I wonder when that game is going to collapse under its own weight. When there are so many combinations that AEG is just pretending to balance them. And I happen to know that they do playtest those expansions very rigorously, but I do wonder what the tipping point is when they're going to call it a day. Because, you know, I jumped ship with grandmas, man. I don't want to play Smash Up really grandmas, bad. You know? That just doesn't do it for me. So I'll stick with my smaller pool.
But I've heard reviewers, like, it's really tough for me to get a bead on two games that I actually have but haven't played yet. I'm looking forward to reviewing Cry Havoc.
Okay.
And Vast, which I know you've played.
Oh, Vast.
But it seems like the reason why I think Vast may be balanced is because if you look at the reviewers or the users complaining about that game, the players rather, complaining about that game, they all complain that a different faction is broken.
Right.
Oh, this one wins every time. Oh, the cave wins every time.
I do enjoy that about that game.
And so I think that's kind of an indicator, right? But you know, the Cry Havoc, I do sort of wonder about the Troglodytes. Mm-hmm. I did actually play that. I said I hadn't played it. I did actually play it at Gen Con, not this last summer, the summer before when it came out. So I do think in general what I'm saying is I think when a game really has an asymmetric nature and depends on sort of and has a lot of asymmetric factions that you need to balance, reviewers need to be very, very careful about making the balanced or unbalanced call.
One thing I saw with Vast was people who had not played all four roles reviewing the game, which to me, I just turned it off because I have actually played all four roles. I've played the game four times. I don't begin to understand it. That's a game with a very heavy rule set. It's not streamlined in the slightest, and that's why I bought it. I kind of want that epic dungeon crawl experience. But you really are playing four separate games as you experience these different roles. I mean, they are totally different. And until you have a really good handle on all of them, I don't think you could review that game, or should even. And this would kind of be where I would want to take it personally. When we are to review games, you know, so we mentioned Tom Vassell, who gets that instinct after one play.
Mm-hmm.
I need a lot more than that. I do not have the breadth of gaming experience to judge a game in that time. And I really hinged on, this is becoming the episode where we just call out everyone in the industry. But Matt Lees from Shut Up and Sit Down mentioned, you know, in a podcast, you know, people come out and say, I like this thing. And everyone will dogpile them and say, well, yeah, but have you played this and this and this and this thing so that you can really accurately say that this other one is any good? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, yeah, but I just like this thing, you know. And I think Shut Up and Sit Down of all the reviewers really embraces that, where if they just like a game, they don't bother if they've played 10 other worker placements to objectively compare it. They're just telling you, hey, we played this, we had a really fun time with it, and we recommend it.
Right. Going back to that question of how many times to play them, I would just close out by saying, for me, I don't feel right about reviewing a game or recommending a game to somebody unless I've had a good 5 plays of it.
I like 5 plays.
It's just, for me, it's almost an ethical issue. And I'm not saying that every reviewer needs to do that.
Right.
But I've just been, I don't know. I've seen a lot of reviewers sort of rush through, make rules mistakes in their explanation of the game because they're just not familiar enough with it.
And I'm willing to cut slack on that one. It's really hard to keep rules straight sometimes. I mean, I've played games 5 times before that I've realized I've been playing a rule wrong.
Yeah, but I don't think that was the case here. But anyway, for me personally, it's 5 tries.
All right. So that is our podcast for this week. We are excited to dive into this. We talk about these questions in our free time.
Yeah.
So this is just something that excites me. And I know that makes me a giant nerd, but I'm pumped to dig into some board games.
I am kind of going to say something that's almost like a commitment to the people listening.
All 3 of you.
All 3 of you, yes. to our 3 listeners, I want to say that Andrew and I really care about getting it right. And I realize that that's a moving target when in something as subjective as board game opinion. But to us, getting it right means that we really think through things and give it a fair shake. And I right. also recognize that doing things like receiving review copies, being paid to promote games, really can sort of taint things. And we're not, we're only on the front end of kind of making these decisions. But I will say that at my very core, I tend to really resist. I'm the kind of guy that would rather, even if it meant buying every game we reviewed
right.
from here on, I would much rather do that than have our opinions sort of tainted by, how can we best monetize this right. podcast? Because in the end, I care more about you playing great games than playing just good games.
Right.
That's what I care about for me.
Sure.
I want to bring my friends around the best games at the table.
Yeah.
And yep, that I realized that even just saying that has a lot of challenges and a lot of problems. But it's much better, I think, to sort of wrestle with these questions than to just sort of, I don't know, give into what I think some reviewers have done, which is every game is good somehow. You know, in the end, I just promoting, you know, whether by intention or just lack of attention, promoting mediocrity in the hobby. We don't need that.
Sure.
So.
And having said that about review copies, if anyone wants to send us a Axis and Allies Anniversary Edition, I wouldn't turn it down.
Yeah, you know what? Glory to Rome Black Box Edition. We could really use
another 6 yeah. or 7 of those.
Yeah, 6 or 7 for any of our listeners if you want to. Yeah. Oh, we should do like a Kickstarter where you don't send in cash.
But you send in Glory to Rome Black Boxes.
Right.
I would be for that.
That's absolutely it.
Let's do that.
Okay. Hold on. I'm going to be right back. There's one more thing I want to record. Hey, Andrew, this is not something we planned in our podcast, but...
I'm shutting down already.
No. Hear this out. Okay, so you know how a lot of podcasts have, like, sections where they read the mail?
Yeah, the dubiously famous podcasts that we may listen to.
Right. So, and having a little intro mail song is a really good idea, don't you think? Yes, see? I can see that you do. Say no more. It's written on your face. I have one.
Something's written on my face.
I have one. You ready to try it out?
Okay.
Okay. By the way, just to educate our viewers, Mail is called post in some countries.
Okay.
Here's the post, quick as a ghost. It is the thing I love the most. When it comes, I long to boast. Post!
I wonder if Blue's Clues wants to sponsor.
No, no, no.
Shut up and sit down.
Hold on. Oh, before he says that, I just want to say that any similarity between this song and a popular PBS children's show is completely incidental. Also, that parodies are legal, and that if the melody line is significantly changed, that's probably not considered a parody anyway.
All right, we're going to wrap up this podcast while damage control is still possible. This has been Get On Board.
You're not even giving it a fair. Fine.
We can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, Board Game Geek under Get On Board, and on our website, getonboard.games. Until next week, this has been Get On Board.
I'm Tim.
I'm Andrew.
Here's the post, quick as a ghost. It is the thing I love the most. When it comes, I long to boast.